Welcome to the Big Sky Astrology Podcast with your host, astrologer and author, April Elliott Kent.
Hello, invisible friend. April here, and the date today is May 20th, 2024. Welcome to episode 235 of the Big Sky Astrology Podcast. This week, the sun enters Gemini season, but gets a little serious in an aspect with Pluto. Venus makes a conjunction with Jupiter and then enters Gemini. Jupiter ends its Taurus journey on a sextile to Neptune, then enters Gemini for a one-year stay. The full moon is in Sagittarius. Venus trines Pluto, and I answer a listener question about starting up an astrology group where you live. The sun enters Gemini on May 20th at 5:59 a.m. Pacific time. It'll be in this sign through June 20th. This is the season of traveling light, of carrying messages from place to place and person to person, pollinating with information. It's a very sociable season. So this is time to get in touch with friends that you haven't seen in a while, catch up on correspondence. It's a wonderful season for short trips, for road trips. I remember when I was very young, this is about the time that school let out for the summer, and we would take long road trips in our Oldsmobile station wagon. Gemini loves to be in motion, but it prefers shorter trips because it doesn't really want to feel locked into an extended trip or extended adventure somewhere else. On May 22nd at 8:14 a.m. Pacific time, the sun in Gemini trines Pluto in Aquarius at 2 degrees. Gemini is very light by nature, as I said, but when it comes together with Pluto, things get a bit deeper and a lot more intense. Now, fortunately, this is a very short transit. Really, it's an effect mostly from May 21st through the 22nd. But it is the sun's first aspect to another planet when it's in Gemini, and it gets the Gemini season off to a little bit deeper start. Gemini and Aquarius, the sign Pluto is in, are both sociable air signs, but Aquarius has more staying power. It's a fixed sign. It likes organizing people. Gemini just likes meeting them and connecting them with each other. Its main job is to move information around and to interact with many people. But Aquarius suggests that we should pull together our contacts and turn them into something lasting. And stay tuned for the listener question segment at the end of this episode, where I talk a little bit about this business of group building. Thursday, May 23rd is a big day. There is a lot of important activity. Venus and Jupiter both end their time in Taurus with a last degree conjunction with one another at 1:29 a.m. Pacific time. And they both make sextiles to Neptune. Venus does so at 3:50 a.m. and Jupiter at 2:44 p.m. Celebrate this fine year that we've had of Jupiter in the sign of Taurus and the positive things that it may have brought your way. Hopefully that's partly been an appreciation of what you have and a slower pace of life. It's important to curb your spending as Venus is coming together with Jupiter because Jupiter can tend to overdo it a bit. And Venus does like to spend. And as these two planets, Venus and Jupiter, bow to Neptune on their way out of Taurus, take a moment to remember that however grateful we are for what we have on a physical level, it's also important to pause and appreciate the less tangible blessings in our lives, and especially the people that we value, that we love. Now, also on the 23rd, Venus enters Gemini at 1:30 p.m. Pacific time. It'll be in this sign through June 16th. This is a Venus that appreciates variety. If during this few weeks you find something you really like, buy it in several different colors. It is a great transit for dating. And since this Venus makes an aspect to Pluto a couple of days later, you might be starting to get ready to find someone serious. But wait until Venus enters Cancer on June 16th to make any decisions about somebody that you might meet now. Now, if you do have a little extra spending money, don't overdo it, but it is a good time to spread it around a little bit, especially in your neighborhood. This is a way of pollinating the things, the businesses, and the people that you appreciate so that they will grow. Now for the moon report, and it begins with the Sagittarius full moon, also on May 23rd at 6:53 a.m. Pacific time. It's at 2 degrees 55 minutes Sagittarius and Gemini. This full moon gives some insight into wealth and privilege. In the chart for the full moon, Venus and Jupiter are still in their conjunction, and the sun in the full moon chart is on the Sabian symbol 3 Gemini, the Garden of the Tuileries. The moon, meanwhile, is on 2 men playing chess. And it reminds us that unless we are born into wealth and privilege, represented by the Gardens of the Tuileries, we'll have to use strategy and careful maneuvering to gain the kind of power that comes very naturally to some. We see this message too in the moon's sextile and the sun's trine to Pluto in the full moon chart. If we're confident, if we're a particularly talented networker, as symbolized by the sun in Gemini trine Pluto, we'll easily attract powerful people and opportunities. And also, we are able to attract them if we can use the moon in Sagittarius and its humor and wisdom. This is the full moon in a lunar phase family cycle that began with the new moon on November 23rd, 2022, at 1 degree 37 minutes Sagittarius. What is it that emerged in your life at that time as a big adventure, a big dream that you wanted to embark upon? At the first quarter in this cycle, on August 24th, 2023, there was some kind of action that took place, whether intentionally or unintentionally, to move you in the direction of that adventure, of that dream. Now we're at the full moon point in this cycle, and this is when we can begin to see the true nature of the adventure that we thought of or initiated at that November 2022 new moon. On February 20th, 2025, there will be the last quarter moon in this family cycle at 2 degrees 19 minutes Sagittarius. And that is the time to make conscious effort to move in the direction of whatever dream it was that you imagined. And you can look really at the house of your chart with Sagittarius in it, the early degrees of Sagittarius, because that can give you a clue as to what you undertook back at that long ago new moon and what you're going to be in a position to complete. let's take a look at the void of course moon periods for this week. On May 19th, the moon in Libra opposes Mars in Aries at 8:48 a.m. Pacific time. It is void of course for 30 hours and 46 minutes. By far the longest void of course moon I remember seeing. And then the moon enters Scorpio on May 20th at 3:34 p.m. A void of course moon period that begins with the moon in an opposition to another planet offers us an insight. During this extraordinarily long void of course moon period, there is a lot of time to contemplate and create new habits that strike a balance between pleasing others to get along, moon in Libra, and just going after what we want without a thought for other people. On May 23rd, the moon in Scorpio trines Neptune at 12:28 a.m. Pacific time. It's void of course for almost an hour and then enters Sagittarius at 1:24 a.m. A void of course moon that begins with the moon trine another planet brings some kind of gift or reward. And in this case, being true to your convictions and loyal to those who have earned it will be rewarded with affection and appreciation. As all void of course moon periods are, this is an opportunity to change your ways, to change your habits. And if your habit of mind has always been that others have a hard time with you because you're too intense or you're very straightforward about what you think, at this time, change that mindset and recognize the people in your life who really love those qualities about you. And finally, on May 25th, the moon in Sagittarius squares Neptune at 7:47 a.m. Pacific time. It's void of course for 49 minutes and enters Capricorn at 8:36 a.m. Square aspects represent conflict. The conflict here is between the enthusiasm and optimism that we see with the moon in Sagittarius versus the quieter, more introspective methods of knowing that we associate with Neptune, which prefers to have faith that things will work out as they should, even if we don't take direct action. So this is a time of reviewing your habits in this regard. Is there a way that you can use that enthusiasm and optimism that we see with Sagittarius, while at the same time making room in your mind to entertain the fact that you don't have to control the way things unfold totally, that there is an opportunity to entertain faith and a more indirect way of going after what it might be that you want? On May 25th at 4:16 a.m. Pacific time, Venus trines Pluto at 1 degree 59 minutes, Gemini and Aquarius. So Venus in Gemini here takes an unexpectedly deep turn as it makes this trine to Pluto, the first aspect that it's making in this sign. And this basically comes down to making a little more of a commitment with individual people, groups, or situations, and more of a commitment than Venus in Gemini generally prefers to make. A trine aspect isn't that bad, even between planets as unlike as Venus and Pluto. It says that the things that we like, the things that we're drawn to, the people who attract us are now ones that we are feeling more likely to make a commitment to. And again, this goes back probably to waiting a little bit until Venus goes into Cancer, which is more of a nesting sign. And Venus in Gemini is a little more about being a little bird flitting around. So we wait to make the actual commitments, but we're looking a little more closely at people while Venus is trine Pluto. And we are willing to entertain the idea of ourselves as part of a group of people that are trying to accomplish something together, or finding our way into a friend group, if that's not something we've been really successful doing in the past. When it comes to the financial dimension of Venus, making it trine to Pluto, this is actually often a very powerful combination, Venus with Pluto, especially in a trine aspect. This has more to do with the intellectual, mental side of dealing with money, making decisions about what you want to do, what you want to invest in. And while Venus is in Gemini, we'll often be just really interested in those kinds of things, in our money and how to deal with it. Later on May 25th at 4:15 p.m., Jupiter enters the sign of Gemini, and it will be in Gemini through June 9th, 2025. Jupiter was last in Gemini between June 11th, 2012 and June 25th, 2013. We're often told that Jupiter brings good fortune, and I think that that can be true. It can also offer a more open and optimistic mindset toward the matters that are symbolized by the sign that it's in. If you happen to be in a, what we would call a Gemini profession, such as writing, journalism, transportation, I think Jupiter is quite likely to bring a little more good fortune your way. But mostly Jupiter brings the desire to have more, for bigness. In Gemini, it craves more variety, more socializing, more conversation, more networking. Use Jupiter in Gemini to learn a new language, to travel to new places that are within a car or train's reach. Even if you're shy, force yourself to get out and mingle. I know one person who has Jupiter in this sign in the 10th house of the chart and is an absolutely brilliant writer. It's brought her great recognition. But she also was a marketing professional for a number of years and did really well in that profession, even though she considers herself a little more inward-facing. But definitely getting out in front of the world and telling a story is what Jupiter really likes in the sign of Gemini. In this week's listener question, listener Stephanie asks via SpeakPipe.
Hi, April. This is Stephanie, and I was wondering if you could give me any tips on starting an astrology group in the town that I'm going to be living in. Thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you so much for your question, Stephanie. And this bright and social Gemini season, especially with Jupiter going into this sign, seems like the perfect time to think about how we can best bring people together in this spirit of fellowship and learning. Let me begin by saying that I'm not much of a group person myself, but I did serve as president of my local astrology group for 4 years. And I did learn a few things during that time, so I'm happy to share my thoughts at least about this with you. However, I took over leadership of an existing group, and while it did need a lot of rebuilding, your situation starting from scratch is quite a bit different. If I were in your shoes and going to a new city, and we're thinking about how to get a group of astrology people together, the first thing that I would do is really make sure there's not already a group operating in your new city. You can start by looking to see if there is an NCGR chapter in your area. NCGR is the National Council for Geocosmic Research, and their website is geocosmic.org. They do have international chapters, as well as a number of them in the United States. So that might be a good place to start. Hop on Meetup if you're in a country where that operates, and it seems to serve a surprising number of countries. If you find that there is an astrology group on Meetup, get to one of their meetings right away. If you like how things are being done, offer to help out. If there's one thing I am certain of from running a group, it's that everyone needs volunteers. But if you don't find that there's a group, or you find that you want to offer something different, let's say they only meet online and you want to meet in person, then I think you start small. If there's a metaphysical bookstore in the area, maybe you go in and introduce yourself. That's the kind of place where astrology people often hang out. Chat up the baristas at the local cafe and ask them what they know about astrology in the area. Tell them you're thinking about starting something. Look for Facebook groups that are devoted to astrology and see if there are people from your city who are hanging out there. Find even just a few people who want to get together and talk about astrology. You can call it a study group if you like, or a new moon circle or whatever. Get together with them at a cafe on a predetermined day of the month. Or, if you feel okay doing it, meet at your home. I know a few astrology groups that started out that way and grew into large organizations. In many ways, these are actually a good way to start out because they're a little more personal and it's clear who the leader is. And that actually is very important. I served on a steering committee of an organization for a while, and the group was run in a very democratic way. And that idea is very appealing, especially to us here in the United States. But it can be difficult to get even the smallest thing done when there is no leader. You really don't have to be an astrologer or a professional astrologer to start an astrology group, although it can help to have some kind of reputation or experience in the astrology community if you're hoping to eventually book speakers, especially well-known ones. But in the beginning, all you need is a love of astrology, some organizing skills, nothing more sophisticated than common sense, and maybe having hosted some parties at your home, and just a few people. I found, actually, that hosting parties in my own home for 20 years or whatever it had been by that time gave me skills that really helped me in a lot of ways when I became the leader of an astrology group. I knew that I needed to create an environment where people felt welcome. And that's basically the same skill set that a host brings to a party. You greet people. You get shy people included, you help people meet each other, serve some refreshments, and make sure everybody knows where the restroom is. Stephanie, thank you so much for your question, and the best of luck to you as you start your group. I'm sure there are going to be people in your new city who will be thrilled that you did. If you, invisible friend, have a question you'd like me to answer on a future episode, just leave a message of 1 minute or less at speakpipe.com/BigSkyAstrologyPodcast or email me at april@BigSkyAstrology.com and put podcast question in the subject line. Well, that is everything I have on my show sheet, so I'm going to wrap this one up. Thank you for listening to the Big Sky Astrology Podcast. If you like what you're hearing, please be sure to subscribe or follow the show in your app of choice. Leave a rating or a review, and I hope that you'll help spread the word by telling an astrology-loving friend about the podcast. You can read show notes and full transcripts and leave your comments about each episode at BigSkyAstropod.com. I want to thank everyone who has shown support for the podcast, especially during my September Podathon. On each episode, I'm thanking some of my financial donors by name. This week, let's give a Big Sky Astrology podcast shout out to Eve Gaida and new donor Golden Wolf. Golden Wolf and Eve, thank you so much for listening to the podcast and for supporting the show with your donations. If you'd like to support the show and receive access to my bonus episodes for the Aries Equinox and the upcoming Cancer Solstice, please go to BigSkyAstropod.com and make a contribution of $5 or more. You can make a one-time donation in any amount or become an ongoing monthly contributor. That's it for this episode. Join me again bright and early next Monday. And until then, keep your feet on the ground and your eyes on the stars.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about April Elliott Kent, visit her website, BigSkyAstrology.com, where you can sign up for her newsletter, read her thoughtful essays, find out more about her books and classes, or book a personal astrology reading. That's all for today. If you're enjoying the podcast, please take a moment to follow or subscribe to stay current with new episodes. And please leave a rating or review. You can follow Big Sky Astrology on Facebook or Twitter and Big Sky Astrology April on Instagram. Thanks again for being here, and we hope you'll join us next time.